Hey, this is Ash from Horror Fix. We have a special treat today. For those of you who have seen the supernatural thriller The Last Shift, which is pretty great, might I add, director Anthony DeBlasi is here with us today to talk about The Last Shift, to talk about supernatural horror, and the fact that today is actually about 2 days out from the launch date in the UK. I believe January 18th is when it launched, Anthony?
Yeah, I believe so, the 18th.
You know, it's always interesting because we are both here in the States, and we just talked about that prior to going live with the interview. And we're always interviewing people from the UK, and the release dates usually, you know, aren't always necessarily in tandem. Do you get to a point where you almost forget that your movie's been released by the time, you know, another country starts to release it? Or is it always sort of playing catch-up to make sure that you're back on that track?
Yeah, it is. It is kind of weird. I mean, this one, it's not too bad because it's January. It came out in the States in October. But, you know, sometimes it's like a year later and you're like, wait, what? What movie was that? And then, you know, answering questions from even now, it's, you know, I made this movie, I guess, like a year and a half ago now. So, it, you know, you get back into it when you're answering a lot of questions, but, you know, it's not always fresh in your mind.
Oh, right. Of course. Now, you're obviously no stranger to horror. You directed 2009's Dread, which also had a Clive Barker influence, correct?
Yeah, Dread was based on his short story, and that's when I was working with Clive on a daily basis. We had just released Midnight Meat Train like the year before, and Book of Blood, all based on short stories from his Books of Blood collection.
We're huge fans of Clive here. We were actually very, very excited when the director's cut of Nightbreed finally came out. So it's been a pretty good couple of years for him with the Scarlet Gospels being released, which actually that was a great book.
Yeah, totally.
Now, The Last Shift we really enjoyed here at Horror Fix, by the way. And there was one thing that we were very impressed with that we wanted to talk to you about is horror usually is sort of an ABC 1-2-3 step narrative. And even being lovers of the horror genre, we see a lot of horror films that are very paint by numbers in that respect. But the one thing that we noticed about The Last Shift, and the one thing that I think was so compelling about it, was how the sort of the sense of overwhelming dread and the atmosphere of the film itself sort of propelled the narrative forward. And it's interesting that the atmosphere sort of becomes that big of a plot device. Was that something that was intentional, or did you just sort of stumble upon that while you were shooting?
I think there was a couple things going in that I think influenced that in a way. And like, I found that in a few reviews, people have compared it to kind of like a video game, which I understand in the sense that I wanted the movie to be really experiential in the sense that we're always inside kind of Jessica's bubble. We're really with her. We're either in her face or right behind her, and we're learning story points through her point of view in a very kind of breadcrumb kind of way. The other thing too was when I talked to Scott, who co-wrote the film with me and produced the film, I said, you know, I wanted to do something that was really based heavily on sound design. That sound design was a huge aspect of the movie, and we spent, you know, every sound in the movie is recorded for the movie. It's 100% all stuff that we recorded on the location. We had large recording sessions where we'd have actors come in and do all recordings in the building, and there were so many just organic sounds in that building with the machinery and just strange stuff inside that building that we recorded. So that, I think, is a huge part of it. It's a very kind of organic sound design where we really could build up the sound and spend a lot of time on this. I had, since we recorded the sound, even we did some before we shot the movie and we did some after we shot the movie, I had all that stuff while I was editing. So I could build it in at a very early stage. I think that helps a lot.
Now, when you say something like strange sounds, obviously that gets the imagination off and running. Now, when you say strange sounds, were you capturing anything that was weird or bizarre in that sense?
Not so much weird as in the sense that the machines that were in this, because it was an abandoned police station. There was a lot of kind of unique, just machinery left behind, and my sound team was able to just get the weirdest sounds, like the just most organic screeches and metals and machinery hums, and the building was really alive with also the cells and the cell doors, and I don't even know what half of it was doing in the building, just in terms of air duct shafts and things like that. It was rich with sound. So that doesn't always happen. I mean, we did another movie afterwards where they came out to the location and ultimately didn't really get that much, because there was like, okay, well, what do we have here? But that building was just endless in terms of things they were able to do and create and play with. Like, they were like kids in a candy shop in that building.
Now, I think it was also interesting that we get a very strong, independent heroine in this that didn't go through the evolution of most female characters in horror films, where they start off, of course, being very pure and virginal, and then they become this strong. There's this transformation from one archetype to another. But your lead comes off very strong in the beginning, which is very rare for horror films. So how did you go about sort of writing this character, and what went into, creating the complexities of her?
I think Scott and I, when we were writing, thought that was one of the most interesting things, is you're taking a trained police officer and you want to make her believable in throwing her in a haunted house situation where, she's got a gun the entire movie, or at least most of the film, so it's like, just that alone, you're walking into the door with someone who has a pistol on their belt, and you're like, okay, well, she's protected and she's trained and she needs to keep her cool. And also, it's her first day of the job, and the last thing she wants to do is look like a fool, and be, and have her peers judge her for that. So I think that was a great place to start, and was a unique situation, a very fine line of someone who is fighting the urges to be afraid instead of giving into it. And then it made us think more about her psychology other than the narrative. It was more about what are her emotional ties to being a police officer, and how do the antagonists use that against her? How do they break her? It's more about a fight of wills than anything else, which is really interesting to play with a character.
Now, some people have looked at The Last Shift, and this is actually a great thing. They've compared it to such films as Assault on Precinct 13. We have this feeling of isolation, but at the same time, it's like isolation and the last refuge. But yet, you've got this sense of this impending intrusion coming in. What were some of the influences you think you had coming into the story?
I think definitely, yeah. Of course, knowing going in, we're shooting in this abandoned police station, and there's forces at work. Assault on Precinct 13 for sure. I mean, I love Carpenter, movies like The Thing and They Live are movies I watch a lot, and Halloween, of course. So he's definitely one of my favorite genre directors, and I think the first Nightmare on Elm Street 2 was definitely an influence to me, just kind of creating a tone that was, that movie's very surreal in a, in a very, I guess, 1980s way, but it's also the charm of the movie, making it feel timeless, kind of. The score of the first Nightmare on Elm Street, I think, is what dates it, but everything else, I think, feels quite timeless and kind of ethereal. And that was, I think, important to me, that the movie feels timeless, at least in some ways. The other movies I talked about a lot were like Black Swan and The Wrestler, which were, I think, two movies that were very conscious of putting the film in one person's point of view, and the way they shot it and the way it felt. Both of those movies have that kind of, we're always with someone, we're always behind their shoulder, we're always up in their face and kind of in their psychological realm a lot.
Well, aesthetically, the look of the film almost becomes part of a villain too. There's this sense of, you know, very finite lighting that I think a lot of horror films unfortunately don't take advantage of anymore. We don't realize that shadows are still pretty powerful things in our imagination. And I saw that a lot in The Last Shift, was the fact that there was so much shadow and there was so much really nice deep contrast there. Aesthetically, was that something that you had sort of thought about before you went into production planning? What sort of went into the aesthetics of the film in that sense?
Definitely, I think we wanted to keep it simple in this way that Austin and I talked about, the DP, and as I talked to my sound guys, you know, the things that scare us in real life tend to be sound and darkness, you know, when we're alone or when we're, they're always like the first indicators of what was that shadow or what was that strange sound or all the lights are off and what's here with me. What's under my bed, like that kind of stuff is so primal. And that's, I think, was always our starting point. Just throwing someone into those unknown situations and those off-putting situations. And also the other thing with Last Shift, which we wanted to embrace, was just the starkness of the building. It's an entirely white building. It's all these fluorescent lights. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that we weren't turning the lights off every time something scary was going to happen. It's like, it's more strategic. The darkness was used in a much more strategic way and a much more, you know, when it's dark, it's really dark, but also when it's bright, it's really bright. You know, I didn't want to make it moody. I wanted the starkness to be the mood, you know, these just bright fluorescent lights and these long white hallways. You know, I didn't say, like, let's knock out every other light and make the ones that work flicker, because that's right. In some ways it makes it one step removed. It's like, well, how often do we walk around in buildings that look like that, you know?
Right. And I think the starkness of public service buildings sometimes are a little scary to begin with, because they seem over utilitarian in a sense.
Yeah, they're just very sterile and very, that building was very sterile and very cold, so, you know, we kind of embrace that.
Now, here in the States, people can currently see the film on Netflix, correct?
Yeah, it's on Netflix, Netflix streaming, and then, you know, iTunes, and it's on Blu-ray and DVD too.
And obviously, you know, we're sort of trumpeting the release of it in the UK, which happened on the 18th of this month as well.
Yeah, and I think it, I actually don't know, in the UK. I think they have access to Amazon. It might be on Netflix streaming. I know it came out on DVD, I think Blu-ray. I'm not sure. No one's told us. Damn you, publicity. no, but find it somehow. Somehow find it in the UK.
Well, we urge our listeners, our viewers, our readers, regardless if they're across one pond or the other, to seek the movie out. We had a lot of fun with it. What's next for you?
I had a movie that premiered at Fright Fest in the UK last August, which is Most Likely to Die, which is like a slasher, like a kind of a proper slasher that, you know, I wanted to make very much like a whodunit slasher in the vein of like Scream or I Know What You Did Last Summer, something that very much embraces the masked killer. And Heather Morris from Glee and Perez Hilton are in that. And that, I think, is due out around graduation time, around May, June.
Well, that'd be timely.
Yeah. And then I'm in post-production on a thriller right now that I did with an actor friend of mine named Patrick Fischler. And we're editing right now, and I'm not sure when that's going to come out.
Well, we'd definitely like to talk to you again, Anthony, prior to a couple of those releases. Again, this will be available for download. Anyone who wants to actually get a transcript, we might have a couple of those available as well. How can people look at where you're going to be, what you're doing? Do you have a Facebook page? Is there some way people can sort of keep up with your comings and goings?
Yeah, I tend to, working on movies, I'm getting better at Twitter for sure. So I've been using Twitter a lot more. Anthony de Blasi on whatever that is, and I don't even know what my Twitter handle is, but and then yes, I have a Facebook page that those are where I tend to update my like work the movies and stuff. I tend to update those pages pretty regularly.
Well, that's great. We'll definitely send our listeners out to that as well. Thanks so much for being with us today, Anthony. We appreciate it. And like we said, we had a lot of fun with the film. So we're
Awesome.
definitely looking forward to what you have next.
Thanks, man. Good talking to
Great. Have a great one.
you too.